This is Your Working Life, a podcast that provides you with tools, inspiration, and resources so you can enjoy your career and love your life. I'm Caroline Dowd Higgins. I'm a speaker, an author, and an executive coach, and today I am delighted to welcome Elaine Lynn Herring to the show. Elaine will discuss the pervasive influence of silence and how we can dismantle it to find our voices at home and at work. Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, I am really looking forward to this great conversation. You and I were chatting before the show got started, and I was telling you, I love, love, love your book because it's so important that we share this impactful change, and we've got a global audience who is just hungry for this. Mm. Elaine, I would love it if you could help this audience understand why we should stop telling people to speak up at work.
You know, I don't want people to stop saying speak up. I'm not anti-speak up, but I do want us to extend that invitation for voice with the nuance and complexity that it deserves. Meaning when people just say, if your manager just says to you, speak up, right? If you were to speak up more, be more visible, be more confident, be more courageous, then we could promote you. Then we could put you on that client project. To me, the advice is limited at best and irresponsible at worst, because just speak up fails to recognize the real and perceived costs of doing just that. Not all of us are situated in the same way. The way that we speak up is perceived in a different way. And so I really am tired of that framing of the situation that says, you just need to speak up, then your life would be perfect. Then you could enjoy your career and love your life. But because you're not doing that, you're the problem. And to me, the problem is that we have all learned to be silent, that the people around us continue to silence rather than support us. And we are all impacted and working within systems that silence certain voices and certain people and elevate others. So instead of saying, just speak up, I want us to solve for silence in a realistic way that has all of the complexity rather than minimizing the other contributions and making each of us the problem.
Mm, I just love that. And, you know, the subtlety is really what we're talking about here. So I would be grateful if you would define what you mean by silence. And mm-hmm. Elaine, what are the different ways that silence presents in the workplace?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. As a lawyer, I love any time that I get to define our terms. So let me do that. Because when I talk about silence, I'm not talking about the generative, meditative, mindful silence that we know has real health benefits. I'm also not talking about the pause that I know so many of us should take, and I hope more of us will take in a conversation to let there be silence. When I'm talking about unlearning silence, I'm talking about there's not enough room in the conversation or in the family system for your needs, that your voice isn't welcome, that you weren't invited to the meeting and you didn't think you could ask, that the times that you have spoken up, you were shut down, you were silenced. And we get those messages from the way that we were raised, from our families of origin, from our school education, from workplaces, right? If you speak up, you are often labeled the troublemaker. In Australia, you're the tall poppy and you don't want to get cut down. And of course, there's cultural aspects of silence often can be deference or respect. So how do we navigate through all of those different expectations that are the ways that we learned to silence ourselves, to fit into the mold and the box that we were given, and actually be able to show up more as our true selves while also creating space for other people to do the same?
Mm.
And you shared so beautifully that in your family, you're the youngest daughter in an Asian American family, and you were raised to be respectful of elders. And often that meant being quiet and deferential, which didn't necessarily support your pursuits in the corporate world and the legal world.
Absolutely. I don't remember if I ended up, if it made the final cut in the book. But the other piece is that I was raised in a Christian household and still identify as a person of faith. And so there is literally lines in the Bible that say, turn the other cheek, right? Don't speak back. Just be the bigger person. Let it go. And I think there's wisdom in all of that. But again, looking for the complexity and the balance of what often gets lost if we're constantly denying or silencing our own needs. We become shells of the people we could be. We show up as other people want us to be rather than having the agency to determine how we want to show up. So when I talk about voice, I don't just mean the words that we use in a meeting. Voice, I mean how we move through the world. What are my values? And am I living in alignment with my values, which we know is what leads to a full and fulfilling life.
You know, I think it's also important, and I'm so grateful that you raised this in the book too, that we think about our hardwiring with personality. And by that, I mean whether we are more introverted or more extroverted. And in the United States, there is a cultural bias that favors the louder extrovert who may speak before they think. And that's just a reality. And I'm one of them. And I really try to honor my beautiful introverted friends, colleagues, and family members because I know they're thinking and they're processing. And I feel like it's my opportunity to provide that space to honor their reflection and give them time to respond. But that's not the case with everybody. It took me years to learn that.
Yeah, absolutely. So often how we show up in the workplace or in our homes that is wiring ends up being translated or perceived as weakness. So if you can't speak on the spot, if you can't ad lib, if you can't do the presentation in 3 succinct bullet points, then you are not leadership material. Right. And so part of this work is how do we broaden the perspective of effective communication, of who people get to be, and lower the barriers to entry for engaging in a conversation. That to have your voice heard, to have and make impact, you don't have to fit into these norms of being an extrovert or preferring to talk rather than type. And the way to do that is actually to design communication flows. So thinking about what communication medium, whether typing, talking, phone, video, Slack, text message, what makes it easiest for you to be able to share your thoughts? And can you negotiate so that more of the conversations in your life take place in that medium? And what is amusing is just finding out that, you know, there are often meetings where no one actually wants to be in those meetings. There are memes that say that meeting could have been an email because it's true. And so can we actually name what's going on in how we work together and how we live together to actually focus on if the key purpose here is to exchange information or to be known by one another, how do we do that most effectively rather than just defaulting to the ways that we've always shown up and always communicated with one another?
That's so beautiful. I believe after reading your book, we need a systemic change. And I'm making this term up, but there are communication bullies that take all the oxygen in the room and want to hear their own voice. And just as you referenced, that probably could have happened in an email. Did we need to gather everyone together? It's ego stroking. So the buried question in there, Elaine, is women have been silenced for eons. How do we change that narrative as women and think about how we find our power in unlearning the silence?
As someone who identifies as a woman, I love this question and I'm so grateful you asked it because it is really multi-layered. And so I want to give as much of that nuance as I can here. I think there are there's the internal work that is ours to do, and then there is the external work that we can coach people to do, and then there's the work that is not ours to do. So let's start with the internal work. Part of what is hard, especially being female, about using your voice is this question of, do I even have a voice? In the book, I talk about my own motherhood journey. And so I wonder if it resonates with you of women are so acculturated and expected to be caretakers, to be showing up, to do all the things and do it with a smile. And as we are solving for everyone else's needs, there is no one really solving for ours. There's no one asking, Carolyn, what do you need today? How can I support you today? And so we, over time, forget that we even matter, because as a matter of survival and also to reduce the cognitive dissonance between our frustration at how things are going and how things seem like this is the only way we can make it work in my family, we just do it. We power through. And so the first place I would start is actually an internal question. What do I need? What do I think? Not what does my family need of me, not what does my manager want me to say, but what do I think? What do I need? And that internal work of asking those questions remind us that we as human beings have needs of our own, have thoughts of our own. And then there's a question of the external work. Who can I enlist to be part of my team? Because speaking up, and essentially what we're doing is changing the status quo, is exhausting hard work. It is not work to be done alone. When I think about team, there's who can be a sounding board to me, because the voices in our head are real, and at least the ones in my head are very chatty. So who is on your team that knows how you want to show up in the world and can continuously nudge you toward that version of yourself? For me, it's whenever I'm doubting myself, I'm texting my best friend and she basically copy-pastes a reply basically every day, which is, you do you. And I need that. I mean, it's so silly at some level, but I forget daily, apparently, that I could do me, because that's not how I was brought up. That's not what I've been rewarded for. So who is on your team that can nudge you, support you, tell you that you're not crazy because you're not? And then there's also coalitions. Who else cares about the same things that you care about, that you can join forces? Because the challenge of using your voice and challenging the status quo is that it's exhausting, and that many of us are also healing from workplace trauma where we have been on the receiving end of retaliatory action or not promoted or sidelined. And so we're trying to heal while trying to do daily life, while trying to change the system. And that doing all three of those things, not to mention the child rearing and the life administration and the home administration and the caretaking and all the other things we do, those three things themselves are too much in one season. So knowing what season am I in, what moment am I in, and if other people are also doing this work and pushing toward more equitable workplaces, a better balance in our communities, toward representation, whatever it is you care about, then you can take that moment, that day, that week to rest and recharge, which is what prevents us from burning out. So there's the internal work and there's the external work. And the last piece I'll mention on that is being clear of what is not my work to do. In writing this book, I'm really trying to speak to people like me who have been silenced, and well-intentioned leaders like myself who want to do better, who really genuinely want to build inclusive teams, who want to have employees who are engaged, who are thriving at work. I'm not trying to persuade a certain group of people who would really rather prefer that things never change and that women didn't work in the workplace and that, you know, women should just be home raising kids. I'm not trying to reach them. And that's a boundary I've set for myself because I cannot take on the work that is not mine to do. I can try to influence other people, but other people also need to be willing and engaged in the work themselves.
I'm so grateful, Elaine, that you've empowered us all and given us permission to ask the question, what do I need? And your awesome friend has also helped all of us with You Do You. That is such an important reminder. So thank you for sharing that. And we're going to continue this delicious conversation after a quick break. We'll be right back. I'd like to tell you about a special offer. If you want to bring your podcast to life or up your podcast game, you can get up to 2 months of free podcasting service with Libsyn using my special code CDHWORK. The Libsyn team will get your podcast on Apple and Spotify and give you access to critical stats and all the support you need to sound your best and grow your show. Use my special code CDHWORK. Hiring the right speaker for your event is a tremendous responsibility. You need a speaker who will work within your budget and engage your audience. Whether you're looking to retain or grow top talent, create a healthy workplace culture, or prevent burnout in your organization, I can create customized content to help you recharge, reignite, or reinvent your career. Let's talk about how I can help you achieve your special event goals. Connect with me at caroline.higgins.com. Elaine, thank you for sharing your personal and vulnerable experience there. I imagine there are heads nodding around the world, people who have either relatable or similar experiences and find great comfort knowing that they're not alone. You write in the book about negative health effects of silence on our overall well-being. Would you share a bit about that?
Absolutely. So in this instance, I'm talking about silence in two ways. One is having to edit out parts of yourselves. Whether that is I'm a person with emotions and I'm not allowed to show my emotions at work because everyone wigs out and doesn't think I have credibility if I tear up during a meeting. Or it is an identity, like there were many years where I was the only non-white person in an organization and I didn't realize it, but I didn't think I could eat lunch with chopsticks because that would make me stick out more. And so I pulled out a fork every time I was in the office. But having to edit out parts of yourself, A, is energy. Having to suppress parts of yourself means that you're constantly on high alert. Your nervous system is on high alert. And our bodies are wired in a way where it is good to have an alarm system. But if that alarm system is on all the time, it compromises cardiovascular health. It can result in insomnia, in hives, in digestive issues. And so when we talk about toxic workplaces, all of those really deep, painful things manifest in our bodies, even if we're not talking about it. The second way that this manifests in health issues is around isolation. If we are suffering in silence, meaning we don't think we can talk about it with anyone, meaning we think we're the only one and we have to carry that load alone, isolation has negative health impacts synonymous to obesity and smoking. So this epidemic of loneliness really is one to solve for, that by unlearning silence, we solve for the loneliness, we solve for the isolation, we solve for the sense that it is only me and I am in this alone.
So powerful. And again, thank you for the crystal clarity of that. It really helped me understand the manifestations and the repercussions of being silenced, if you will. Elaine, you are such an extraordinary coach and facilitator. I'd love to hear about a real life example about how perhaps you've coached a leader or maybe a team to do what you call solving the problem of silence. One of the key takeaways that I got from your book is that unlearning silence is a key to unleashing talent.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about a team, it really is an ecosystem. And for any of the folks listening who are familiar with family systems theory, this is drawing from it because we are human beings interacting with one another whose actions impact one another intentionally or unintentionally. So some of my favorite work with teams comes up because people say, well, Elaine, can you help me learn how to speak up more? And sure, absolutely. There are chapters 6 and 7 about that in the book. But there's only so far that the ways that we speak up can take us. If we really want to unleash talent on a team, it's a question of how do we bring forth the best ideas, not just the loudest ideas. So one of the statistics that popped out to me as I was researching the book is that in a 6-person meeting, more than half of the speaking time is typically taken up by 2 people. And so the Babel theory of leadership is real, of the more people talk, the more people perceive you as leadership, as a leader or as leadership material. So the work to really unleash talent is to change that paradigm, to say, what are the ways that we can optimize for voice, right? Asking that question that we talked about earlier of what makes it easiest for you to speak up, and for the team leader to ask that question of everyone in a team. And this is a fantastic, you know, offsite activity or group team meeting activity that doesn't actually take that long. And for the people who think better after the fact, sending out the question ahead of time, but what makes it easiest for you to speak up? And having these conversations in a group, not just one-on-one, because the aim is for everyone on your team to actually help one another communicate more effectively with each other. So naming that so that people can be cognizant of, oh, Caroline works better by text, or they prefer a walk, right? Something about movement helps us have the conversations rather than staring at each other on a screen. So we're really looking to start the conversation about what makes it easier. And oftentimes what's amazing is that conversation alone, being able to talk about it, raises awareness of our differences, raises awareness of the opportunity, raises awareness of, frankly, the very low-hanging fruit of the tweaks we could make that would make it so much easier for my teammate to bring forth their best ideas. And then there's longer-term work of looking at employee development, right? One-on-one conversations with a leader of where are you in your career? What do you really care about in life? What do you want to be doing? And how can we create places where you can unleash your genius that are anchored to the things that you care about? So that deep work on a team that is looking at it holistically, right? What can people do individually differently? What can we do differently as a team in how we're communicating and working? What structural things might need to change? And signaling all the time that we want to have these conversations. We're going to prioritize these conversations. We're not just going to give lip service to it, but we're actually going to do it in action.
Wow. Elaine, I am deeply, deeply grateful for you. And this concept of optimizing for voice is something that we can all put into practice. So as we draw this wonderful conversation to a close, I'm hearing you say we must choose a different way. And as you and I chatted before the show, let's get to it. So one takeaway that you'd like to leave with this global audience, a baby step that they can put into practice to learn to speak their mind, unleash their talent, and live more fully by unlearning their silence?
Yeah, let me take two steps there. One is to say, let's start with our mindset. So if no one said this to you today or in the last week, last month, or last year, let me say it here. You matter. You as an individual matter. Your needs, hopes, dreams, concerns matter. Not because you have to prove yourself, not because you need to get a certain result, but by nature of being human, you are deserving of having your needs, hopes, goals, and dreams heard and honored. And that leads me to the action, which is to try something. If you are someone who has hesitated to speak up in a meeting, you can start with a low stakes experiment. I talk in the book about the angst I felt in experimenting in asking a taxi driver to open the window. That's where I had to start. But start with an experiment of asking the question of what your needs are and sharing those needs with someone in the form of a request. Even if they deny it, it's still a win for you because you've taken that rep to start to build the muscle of representing your own needs, which is the first step to getting them met.
Elaine Lynn Herring, I am deeply grateful for you, and I've learned so much today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Your incredible book is called Unlearning Silence: How to Speak Your Mind, Unleash Talent, and Live More Fully. And of course, it is available on Amazon and all major book retailers. But Elaine, would you be so kind as to tell this listening audience how they can follow and engage with you after the show?
Absolutely. I'm on LinkedIn every weekday, so please follow or connect with me, Elaine Lynn Herring, and also sign up for my monthly newsletter that has tips on how to use your voice and build cultures of voice straight to your inbox where your manager may or may not see it, but it's for you.
Elaine, I wish you continued success, and I hope our paths cross again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Your Working Life is now available on all major podcast platforms, and I'd love to hear from you. So let us know how we're doing and leave us a review, because this will help new listeners find us online. And a special shout out to my extraordinary podcast colleagues, Laura Deck, Executive Director of Publicity and Communications, and Claire McInerney, Executive Producer. Thank you for making this show awesome for our global audience. We now have listeners in 34 countries. I'm Caroline Dowd-Higgins. Thanks for listening.